Welcome to Geekstrom, the podcast where I've already run out of ideas and we're talking about Game of Thrones again.
Back by popular demand.
I'm your host, Frankie, and joining me today are Jared.
Hey, that's me.
Anthony.
Hello.
And Ethan.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. So a four piece we got going on here. We are now.
Can you handle it?
Yeah, we've become Weezer instead of Blink 182, so we're going in the right direction.
Oh hell yeah, we've peaked.
It's all downhill from here.
Yes, exactly. Where's Tom DeLonge when you need him? We're gonna talk about Game of Thrones again, mostly because this last episode left a few of our. Would you guys be panelists? Are you considered panelists? Are we a panel?
Yeah, definitely we're a panel. This is like the fucking Hollywood Squares up in here.
Boom. Who's the most likely to be the effeminate circle or middle tile?
Well, I know Bruce Anthony is Bruce Valange.
Yep.
There we go. I'm Whoopi. Anthony writes all my material.
Yeah.
I don't know the other guys.
Gilbert Godfrey, did he ever make it on Hollywood Squares?
Yeah, sure. Can I be him?
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Damn it. Then I'll be
you're the host, whoever that was.
Yeah.
That guy that also did America's Funniest Home Videos, right? After Bob Saget?
No.
I was gonna say, I don't know who. Yeah.
The guy that did Hollywood Squares.
Oh, that really boring guy.
The yes. Tool Time guy.
Tom something, right?
No, Tom the Selleck? Tool Time guy?
No, yeah, no, Tom,
Tom DeLonge.
Yeah, Tom DeLonge.
That's right.
Okay. Yes, so some of our panelists, because that's what we are, were less than thrilled with the old Game of Thrones from this last weekend. Some of us, who will it'll become apparent soon, called it the worst episode that has ever happened in the show's history.
What a brilliant point that someone made.
it's to be taken with a grain of salt, though, because this is also coming from the same person that said that Tobey Maguire was the best Spider-Man, which,
that's
if
verified.
You listened to the last episode of Geekstrom, has been disproved. And also hashtagged, I believe. So
sounds well, like I can't speak to that because I haven't seen the new Spider-Man,
you could still say that Tobey Maguire is the worst without any kind of qualification.
No, but he's the best. Absolutely. Though. He's the best.
Yeah, oh boy.
No,
I mean, it's just him versus one other guy, and the other guy fucking sucks. So
that is true.
There's no argument.
I guess that's true. But yeah, let's start with Ethan. Ethan.
Oh, hey. Wow.
Did you not like this last episode that was on?
Yeah, spoiler, I'm the guy who said it sucked the most of all the ones. yeah.
What episode was it, by the way?
Look that up. That'd be a good point.
Four?
No, it was episode five. Eastwatch.
Yeah, season episode seven, five. Episode five.
Pardon me.
Oh, yeah.
Eastwatch.
We're like almost near the end.
How many are left?
Two.
Two more. And then
two more.
One more season. And we're finally have our lives back.
Yep.
And I could finally jump off that bridge.
Nothing more great will happen. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you want me to start spilling my beans here, but
just spill them beans. What in particular, besides the overall episode, was there anything that was immediately grinded your gears?
Well, I mean, immediately the friggin' episode opens up with Jaime Lannister somehow swimming a mile underwater in full armor when there's a fucking dragon watching right over him. I don't know how he made that out. So that was a bit of a tough way to start. Tough pill to swallow, especially because...
I think I saw someone refer to it as a Braun ex machina, which I thought was pretty clever.
It was kind of like a double Braun ex machina because he saved his life from the dragon, and then he somehow saved him from drowning. And all right, I'm already getting mad. It's just like they keep shooting themselves in the foot. It's like, why end the last episode with Jaime looking like he's about to go like 100 feet underwater if you're gonna have him just be fine afterwards? Like, it's such manufactured.
It worked with it worked with Tyrion, right? Although they didn't cut an episode on that when he fell underwater. They actually had the class to catch up with him and show him getting out of the water. Remember when the stone man dragged him under?
Yeah, that was season 5.
Yeah, him and Jorah the Explorer.
The weakest of the characters, yeah.
Yeah, maybe I should put it out there that, unlike your last episode you guys did about Game of Thrones, I have no knowledge of the books. So I'm representing the average Joe who watches the show.
The common man.
I'm the common man.
The Trump
white
voter.
Working class, yeah.
But, you know, don't put that on me. Oh, I mean, geez. I probably have similar mental deficiencies because I cannot remember anything that happens like 2 episodes prior.
So, hey, so Tyrion is the dwarf.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's Kit Harington?
Yeah. So with that didn't start out well. And then they also kind of went to the pretty hackneyed line at this point where you know the only person that gets to kill you is me, whereas like people say that when they're kind of friendly with the person. And it's like, oh,
yeah, I didn't get why that line was in there.
Yeah.
That's kind of my whole problem with this episode. It was very much the most like Hollywood cliche of any episode I recall.
Well, it ended with them creating the Expendables. So,
yeah.
It was
Hollywood.
Hold on. Listen. Why would they not be the Inglourious Bastards? I mean, there's 2 bastards.
Well, what I mean about them being the Expendables is that it's just a collection of a bunch of people who the audience recognizes already. So it's just like all these characters who they don't have any ideas of what to do with their plots. They're just like, oh, well, the audience recognizes them, so we'll just make them part of a group. Does that make sense for like any of their characters? Not really. About half of them, maybe. But, you know, the audience knows all of them.
It was also the second time, I don't know if it was this episode, but John keeps reminding people of the first time that he met them when he meets them again, which is kind of a weird thing for him to keep doing. It's like, oh,
like
I saw
looking
you
at the
once.
Camera.
Yeah, it's like, just in case you forgot who this person is, this is who they are to John.
Yeah, they should do like one of those Wayne's World flashbacks where he just looks at the camera and he's like, billy-loo, billy-loo, billy-loo.
They should do one of those little, like they do in comic books, where they have the editor's note flash up in the corner that just lets you know what issue they're referring to. Yeah, just be like, just go watch episode, season 1, episode 3 again, guys.
Yeah, I wasn't. Oh, we're kind of sandwiching this though, because there's a lot of stuff in the middle there that's kind of also not good.
It's a whole episode, actually.
Yes. So I think the biggest thing, and this is part of the one of the main reasons that we have resident Game of Thrones expert Anthony DePalma on, is to explain all of the very wink wink nudge nudge situations that have gone on with and surrounding our good friend Jon Snow. Hit it, Anthony.
Okay. Well, there was kind of a big bombshell this week. I don't know if I'm gonna be jumping ahead here. But we have to go to the Citadel, which I'm going to rant really quick. I have a huge fucking problem with it.
Yes.
All of those scenes are like boring as shit. Okay.
Yeah.
Except the one thing I liked was all the maesters sitting around and bullshitting, and they're kind of like laughing about, you know, oh yeah, the three-eyed raven, and they're just kind of like going off like that, and I'm like, okay, this is cool. And then Sam walks in and he fucking ruins everything as usual, and then he was like, oh well, I saw the White Walkers, and they're like, okay, fuck off. And then, you know, Slughorn from Harry Potter, you know, oh, he's a good lad. I'm like, okay. But then, you know, Gilly is reading a book for some reason, because like the audience has to know that she knows how to read. And she's like Watson annulment, and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, what? And at that point, I had to go to the bathroom, so I made them pause it.
Here's them.
Yeah, my Game of Thrones.
You're watching
shout out. Yeah, pretty much. I don't have HBO, so I have to use my friends. So I was like, whatever.
Party as much as you're just mooching.
Pretty much. Listen, okay, we bring food and treats and we get along. It's always a good time.
It'd be great if you didn't even plan it and you're just like in the Truman Show, the friend who shows up with beers always at the opportune moment. You're like, hey guys, what are you doing tonight? Oh, wow, HBO, huh?
Oh, Game of Thrones is on tonight? Wow. How about that?
That's pretty much me. Oh, yeah, I completely forgot at 9 o'clock on Sunday. But no, so we have to, you know, remember that Gilly knows how to read and what's an annulment. And I was like, all right, the scene is going to be fucking god awful. And then I heard Rhaegar Targaryen and I was like, oh, wait, what's happening? And it turns out Rhaegar Targaryen had an annulment with Elia of Dorne, who you might remember from not ever appearing in the show because she was dead. Oberyn Martell's sister. So basically, Rhaegar was like, all right, I'm out of here. So he gets an annulment and apparently marries in secret to, well, they don't say, but it's pretty obvious. He marries Lyanna Stark, which would make Jon Snow a legitimate legitimate trueborn son. Ugh. So he's Jon Targaryen by the law, which means his claim to the throne is higher than Daenerys's. And it kind of makes Rhaegar look like a dick because he pretty much got rid of his wife and then married a new girl in his wife's homeland. But whatever, that's neither here nor there.
Well, I guess my reaction to that is that good? Did you like that part?
I think it kind of I don't know. I did like it because it's like, oh, cool, like raises the stakes. You know, maybe Jon as a bigger claim to the throne tension, but in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, Jon, I don't think is going to sit on the Iron Throne because he wouldn't want to. And also, the other thing that stuck out to me was the fact that the High Septon, and they gave him a name. High Septons don't have names, okay? They discard their old identity. So I don't know. Yeah. So it's like, you know how we have like Pope Francis? And, like, whatever his old name was before he was Pope Francis, we don't know or care about. That's pretty much what the High Septon is. Mm. So that pissed me off. And then Sam left right after that revelation that he didn't think was important. And I was like, okay, so he pretty much just ruined the whole point of him going to the Citadel to become a maester for the Night's Watch. And he's just like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm Sam. And so now we get to leave.
After grabbing random books.
Yeah, which one of them is going to be important. Yeah. I get what one of them is going to be important. All the billions of books in there. Imagine if you opened one of those scrolls and it said Snape kills Dumbledore and he's like,
damn it, Slughorn. So what did you think about them doubling down on the theory with the whole petting the dragon situation?
Dude, that whole scene was so fucking stupid.
It went on for so long.
Yeah, it's such a long scene. You get the point, and at least, you know, when they had Tyrion and his dragon scene, at least he had a purpose to it. You know, he was going to let the dragons out, so whatever. Mm-hmm. But this one, I mean, it kind of goes to show how sloppy the fucking show is. So, Jon's just standing on the, like, cliff, like, whatever. Like, how long does it take to get out to this cliff? So he, I guess, sees maybe a dragon way off in the distance. He walks out to the cliff. The dragon drops, you know, he pets the dragon, whatever. His wolf still there, which would be awesome.
But wait, he doesn't just start petting the dragon. The dragon starts, like, charging him.
Yeah.
Even though he's shown already that he's, like, very afraid of these dragons, for some reason he this time nuts up and just, like, stands there. But it's like, this whole time we've seen him, like, pissing his pants when the dragon flies by. Why is he just going to be a tough guy
at least,
now?
Like, if someone had a dog, I would ask, can I pet the dog? I wouldn't just, like, reach out. You don't know what dogs are doing. But anyway,
yeah,
so
he saw Daenerys, and he was probably like, sorry to cut you off, but he was like, oh, look, Daenerys, she's not going to let him eat me because she's into me. And
yeah, he's trying to maintain frame around the chick. He's like, I can't show them a big wiener around these things. No, but the part of the scene that really annoyed me is that, so they have this, like, 2 second or 2 minute, like, you know, get together, and then, like, her guards just show up with Jorah, which is you know, that's a pretty momentous meetup. You know, he went off, he essentially got Westeros aides It was a, like, death sentence. He got cured somehow, like, you know, a miracle. He's cured. He comes back, and it's just like this, like, impromptu, yeah, we just thought you'd be out here on this cliff, so we brought this guy who said he knew you. And it's just like, God damn, this is so fucking lazy.
Yeah.
Also, and I know, like, not just with this and the prior podcast and basically everyone that has any kind of issue with how this is going on, but how fast everything is happening. If this dude had was essentially flayed, had, like, skin ripped off of, like, at least 33% of his body, don't you think he'd have to recover just a little
bit?
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, it was a procedure that's almost never attempted because it's so deadly. And the guy just, like, pulled it off. And then, like, the next day he's like, yeah, I'm fine now.
I'm gonna go on a ship and get out of here.
I don't know. I'm willing to overlook that. And, like, kind of the same way I overlooked Jamie emerging from the river 1,000 miles away. Like, I figure, whatever, it's, you know, TV. They got to get the show on the road. Like, I don't think anyone would really be interested in watching, like, the healing process of Jorah's skin graft or whatever. Like, I don't think anyone would care. So, well, like, I don't mind.
It's the same question as, like, when Euron is like, hey, build me 1,000 ships. And he's like, okay, now you've got the biggest armada in the world. It's like, all right, well, if it's that easy to do that, like, why would that be a significant thing? So if it's that easy to cure Grayscale, why are they schlepping all these fucking guys off to some island? It's like, you just need to wear gloves and then, like, cut the stuff off.
Just follow the fucking instructions.
Yeah. It just makes them all look like fucking morons. Like, is this the whole society so stupid that they, like, nope, we'll never be able to cure this disease again? It's like, oh, no, you just need a penicillin shot. It says so in the book.
It removes all the gravity from, like, anything that's happening. There's just, like, no consequences anymore.
That's gravity is the word.
Do you think that there would be a way that they could build in amounts of time without, you know, waiting for episode to episode? Because I think the problem with, like, what people are calling, like, fast travel, where everyone gets everywhere immediately, and anytime someone is expecting something to happen that seems like it should take a while, happens instantaneously. Would there be a way through, you know, a narrative or storytelling aspects that could make it seem at least like it lasted a little bit longer? Because, I mean, like, from episode to episode, Jorah comes all the way to Dragonstone?
Yeah.
Comes all the way to Dragonstone after getting his shit that no one had ever cured before taken care of in, like, an evening. It was like outpatient procedure, essentially. And then gets that shit knocked out. And then gets to Dragonstone, and then hangs out for, like, 45 minutes, and then is north of the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I've traveled around the world for this woman, like, I love with all my heart, and I'm just going to peace out in 20 minutes.
It's, I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, because even in this season, I mean, the plot suggests that when, you know, they tricked the Unsullied to go to Casterly Rock, and then they destroyed your ships. I mean, the suggestion is that they are kind of taken out of the picture. Yeah. You know, because they're on the other side of the continent and they have no boats. But at the same time, you've got Jaime just traveled from Highgarden to King's Landing, and he did the last half of that travel without a horse, apparently. I don't know how the fuck he got out of that river and then got to King's Landing. And so they're really at that point, like, your brain probably doesn't, it's like too fast to even really keep track. But at the same time, it's like, well, it's really hard to believe that these guys are, like, now taken out of the picture. Like, they could, in that amount of time, be at King's Landing.
What I don't get is, like, they have to move at this pace because there's only, like, 8 or 9 episodes left. But why is that the case? Like, why is the show, which is easily the most popular show ever on television, like, not running for 2 or 3 more seasons?
I think it's because the showrunners are just fucking all set. Like, they just don't want to do it anymore. Which is, like, fine. I get it. Like, you know, you've been doing the same thing for, like, 9 years. But, I mean, it's still, like, just get new fucking showrunners. And that's the case. I don't know.
Yeah, Benioff and Weiss, they really want to get to that Confederate show as fast as possible.
Yeah.
That's the real path.
I mean, the time is right for that show.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Maybe the 6th book will be out by then.
That'd be cool.
Well, so I got a question for you guys.
Shoot.
in comparison to the extremely long dragon petting sequence versus the Tyrion and Jaime sequence underneath, you know, the, I guess, in the bowels, in the dragon shooting range downstairs. That was something where I felt like there could have been, to steal Ethan's wonderful term, gravity. There could have been a little bit more there. And patent pending. But they just rushed right through that one, too. And
I mean, that's just good sense. If you have one of your best actors with a good dramatic bit of dialogue, you don't want to dwell on that. You want to take, like, two of your worst actors and a massive CG budget, and that's what you want to dwell on.
Well, I think it's become apparent that these guys do not know how to write dialogue. So any long dialogue scene, they're just like, we can't do that. We're going to skip on to the next battle, which they do well. I mean, yeah, the friggin' loot train attack, that was cool, even though the name was stupid. But they just can't do dialogue at all. Like, there hasn't been a single good conversation since they left the books.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask, Anthony, do you think that that's pretty accurate?
I mean, yes and no. Like, it's, I think we're kind of going back to, like, when we, our first Game of Thrones episode, where we were kind of like, well, since they don't have the books as, like, source material, they're kind of making shit up, like, it kind of doesn't work, but I mean, I think there have been instances where I've been like, oh, I like this scene, but they're like usually with characters that aren't typically point of view characters in the books. Like pretty much every scene with Varys, I do like, even though he never really shows up that often in the books. So I think it depends on the character. Like they can write certain characters really well.
But I mean, I just don't think they can. Like, yeah, Varys is awesome and he has that scene with Tyrion, which should have been really cool. I don't know, but like nothing, I don't know, it just felt so empty. This show's very hollow now.
Well, I kind of, and I feel sort of the same in that, like, it's all rushed and they gotta get the show on the road and all that, but I kind of liked the scene with Tyrion and Jaime because I felt more like it was about the stuff that wasn't said that, like, they didn't even get to. Like yeah, they talked a little bit about, like, oh, why did you kill, you know, dad, and then, oh, you killed Shay too? Like, you know, Tyrion's, like, people don't forget that Tyrion's not really a good person.
Yeah.
And the show has kind of made him, like, the hero, but he's kind of a dick. Like, in A Dance with Dragons, he has a scene where he pretty much just, like, has sex with some random girl who he knows doesn't want to have sex with him just because he can. And, like, I feel like the show doesn't want to make these characters look like bad guys. And then the second it does, in fairness, like, the fandom starts freaking out, like, oh, Daenerys burned people alive, she's the mad queen, fuck that, Daenerys had every right to burn Samwell Tarly's parents, I don't give a shit, I'm 100% on her side with that. So you know, she gave them the option to go to the wall, and he said, no, you don't have the authority, alright, well, what the fuck else is she gonna do, get burned, I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't know why they were like, wait a second, like, we're conquering this whole land. It's like, what? The rules say you can't send someone to the wall. It's like, okay. Like, they're desperate for people. They wouldn't turn it away. Like, just do it.
Yeah, plus, like, there's a dragon right there. Like, you've never seen one before. It burned your whole loot train. And you're just going to be like, no, but the rule book says you can't tell me what to do. Like, now's not the time to dwell on technicalities, dickhead.
I feel like that was angry about him. That was one scene that would have benefited from Ethan's script doctor. I don't know if you want to go into that, Eth.
Ooh, I like
it. Yeah, we can do that. So, yeah, that's a good jumping off point, I guess. And it carries back from the beginning. So, like I said, it starts off with shit because Jaime somehow escapes this battle. And that leads to them having to then reconnect with Jaime with that stupid reconnaissance mission with Tyrion that makes no sense. Because if Cersei knew he was there, like, why wouldn't she capture him and kill him? I don't know. So, and then that, of course, leads to the stupid Expendables mission, which makes no sense also. So my fix for all this, and fix the entire friggin' series, just have Jaime get captured at the end of that battle. And then Daenerys and Tyrion would have like some leverage at least over Cersei with the devastation that their one dragon just displayed that Jaime could vouch for. So like everyone has been saying on the show, like it's obvious that Daenerys could win right now. So you use that with Jaime to convince Cersei to give up her armies to fight the White Walkers. And then the whole show just shifts to that, which it should have done, you know, forever ago, because White Walkers are just taking forever to get to this wall for some reason. And then, like, through that battle, you can get all the conflicts that I'm sure they're going to try and bring up later, which is, I'm sure Cersei's going to agree to help Dany and then backstab her. You can do that in the same way after, you know, she already agrees to fight the White Walkers. And then you can avoid all the shit that they threw into this episode. And I think it, I don't know. I think it makes some good sense because Jaime's gotten captured before, so why not have him get captured again?
And I mean, again, like just imagine the gravitas of that scene with Tyrion standing with Dany as she's threatening to burn Jaime instead of two fucking dickheads he doesn't give a shit about. And he's like, no, you can't do it, dude. Their whole house is like, what do you fuck do you care, dude? You're fucking conquering the whole continent. But if it's his brother,
give it to someone else, yeah.
Then it's like, oh shit, now. That's true. You know, now I'm really invested. Is she going to kill Jaime? Is, you know, Tyrion going to, you know, jump in there and force her to make a decision, you know? That'd be a lot more interesting.
You can get the same,
No, I'm just saying that that would have been way more interesting.
Mm-hmm. You get the same connection there.
I also think they should have, this is going back two episodes, but I think they should have let Bronn die fighting the dragon. I don't think he's going to get a better death than that, and that episode was so good for him. And I really hated, like, a couple seasons ago when they were just kind of, like, dragging him around because people like Bronn, and it was like, kind of spreading him thin.
Yeah, that kind of goes off what Anthony's saying. It's like, I think all these, like, kind of characters and semi-main characters are, like, too precious to them at this point.
Half of them are alive. They're probably going to be dead in the books, or they're already dead, some of them.
Yeah, Bronn, Brienne, too. What is she doing? Nothing.
You know what she's not doing? She's not being a bodyguard for Sansa, which is fucking annoying me. It's like, if that's her role, then she should just be like the Hound was to Joffrey in season one, where he was, like, always around him. Instead, she's just, like, constantly training with Pod, as Sansa's hanging out with a guy that she openly does not trust.
Well, the one thing that I wanted to get before we got too far away from it is about this all the characters being precious and, you know, everyone kind of seeming heroic at one point or another, except for Cersei. I think they kind of revel in the fact that she is just completely off the rails at this point and doesn't give a fuck and just kind of, you know, enjoys her role as, you know, essentially more of the Mad Queen than Daenerys could probably ever be, because, you know, she's unhinged at this point. Even when she's trying to tell her, you know, brother about their incestuous child that's growing inside of her, she's still like, hey, guess what, don't fucking betray me again. You know, so it's like she doesn't give a shit. And also weird to need to convince a woman of the undead when she's got a literal undead zombie monster following her around at all times, but, you know, be that as it may. But yeah,
honestly, I was gonna say, why the fuck do they even need to convince her? Like, who gives a shit? Just go there. Just go there, light the Red Keep on fire with Drogon, and then be like, okay, follow me, and then that's it.
That's what I'm saying. Bring the dragon and be like, this war's over. Like, I could kill you right now. It's very obvious to everybody. And then you can just move past all this.
Did Daenerys actually bring back that entire Dothraki army back off of the mainland onto her island?
Somehow.
Instead of, like, just turning them towards King's Landing and at least sieging it.
Yeah. Or, you know, going across the continent to Casterly Rock and hooking up with the Unsullied so they could at least have a giant ground force, you know, in the main continent.
I mean, maybe that's what did happen. I don't think we should. I don't think they said or, you know, revealed.
It was really like just that. like a dollar store called Drogo that was there, right? Basically,
yeah,
yeah. So yeah, maybe he's not representative of the whole group, but I kind of assumed he was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the scene ended with the dragon burning them, which I know we've been shitting on the show a lot, but that was, like, the way that was, like, filmed, and pretty much every scene with the dragons is, like, incredible to look at because they just look so good. So that's my big compliment, you know. But yeah, they don't say what's going on. So in 15, 20 minutes, the Dothraki will probably be, you know, at the neck or, you know, at the wall or something. Who knows?
One thing I will say, though, about the dragon burning the Tullys? Tarlys?
Tarlys.
This isn't a point I made originally, but that was a pretty quick death compared to a lot of the torture we've seen on the show. So it's like, that doesn't look too bad.
yeah, if you're going to go out.
It was like 5 seconds and they're ash. Like, well, yeah. It's better than like getting your ears chopped off.
Yeah, they actually died better than most of the people that died in the train scene. Because a lot of those cats were just running around on fire, but they just got completely, you know, evaporated.
Immolated, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say something also about the kind of the preciousness of the characters. I guess partly it's a function of the show being, you know, winding down. But, you know, early on, especially the first 3 seasons, you had a kind of a constant churn where you had, you know, major characters die, but then new characters would show up because they go to new place. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, you don't want to introduce too many new characters late in the game, but it is weird when you have this whole new setting with, like, Sam goes to the Citadel. And, I mean, in the books, he meets, like, 4 new characters who all have, like, extensive backstories and secret identities sometimes, like, in the waiting room of the Citadel. And, you know, instead, he's had this, like, half a season at the Citadel, and he's just got this single cliche, you know, master, you know, the principal is too strict kind of thing, relationship, and now he's gone, and it's, you know, it's kind of disappointing. We saw new locations with Highgarden and with Casterly Rock. We met nobody at either one, and in Highgarden, I mean, it was kind of minimized down to just one scene in, like, one room with an old lady, and so you do lose... You know what it reminds me of? It's almost the narrative version of, you know how you've seen like the kind of behind the scenes, the when they'll show you Harrenhal, what they shot, and then after they added all the CG in to like fill it in and make it look epic.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the narrative version of like the before, where they have like just the basic elements and there's like nothing really filling in the space to make it feel real.
Yeah, there seems to be like a fear of letting anything breathe on the show anymore. Like I'm saying with conversations seem very brief. I want to almost like set a timer to the scenes next episode because I feel like they're all the same length of time. and there's like there's no room to like inhabit any of these spaces, which I think they did so well in the first 6 or so seasons.
You know how you do that?
The first 6 or 7 really, seasons were really good.
Really, really got a pee dance where you just like you have to continually be moving. Because you feel like if you stop moving, you're going to literally piss yourself.
I'm doing that right now.
that's kind of what this season feels like. It's like they can't not move. It's like they're like sharks. If they stop moving, they die. It's very very strange. And it's one of those things where it's like we keep harping on it, and we understand why, but at the same time, it just feels like. It's cheapening what it is that are, you know, especially when you know when something's going to end and you have a feeling of like this, it's all supposed to be building to something, but it feels like because we're getting to that something so quickly that it's less special, which is a bummer for something that, like Ethan says, like the biggest show of all time ever. And it just kind of feels like there's a lot of shit that went into it to get us as involved and as enthralled as we are, and now we're getting to the end of it and just kind of like I'm sure it'll pay off in a way, but it doesn't feel like that right now just because of the pace of the story at this point. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
well, it's the case of I think the answer to why they tapped out with 2 shorter seasons, I honestly just don't think they have any more ideas. And I think that's evidenced in, you know, you might have had episodes earlier seasons where you didn't catch up with a character, and that could be frustrating. You're like, oh, well, you know, what's Brienne doing? She left and she was supposed to do this. But, I mean, there was still the sense that she, you know, while we were in some other area, she was still, pursuing that goal. Whereas now you have, I mean, characters who just kind of like, when they're off screen, they're just kind of like waiting. And like, what the fuck is Melisandre doing now? She came to Dragonstone. She said it was to bring those two together. She didn't really do that. I mean,
well, I thought she left. Didn't she go back to?
Yeah, she's going to Volantis.
Oh, she's in Ashai or whatever now. Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, like, what's Grey Worm doing? I don't know.
Yeah, what? Well, like, what does Varys do in between scenes? You know, the earlier seasons, you had the idea that Varys was always working on something. And then, like, Littlefinger, he's kind of getting something started now, but it's like a Dennis the Menace level prank. Instead of, like, yeah, you know, the really convoluted, you know, where you as a viewer couldn't almost follow what he was doing. I fucking hate his plot so much.
Yeah, I definitely want to get into some of the Winterfell
stuff.
That's
the question.
Yeah, because he's a character on the TV show, and that's the only reason.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, his character, I mean, he should have realized, like, why did he even come there is the question. Like, he came there, what was his plan? To just, like, hope that Sansa would, like, want to bang him out of gratitude? That's not his style. He should have leverage. He should have been like, oh, now I've got the only army here. I waited for you guys to destroy yourselves, so I'm the captain now. He should never have let Jon Snow get crowned king. He had all the power there, and yet he just kind of, like, sat back. And I think it's because the showrunners are like, oh, well, Littlefinger's a sneaky guy. He's going to be sneaky. It's like, yeah, but he has the power now. He wouldn't be sneaky now.
Well, it's like in the beginning, too, like all the Lords of the Vale were, you know, they're like, oh, Sansa, we came here for you. Well, why didn't they fucking open their mouths when they were electing Jon as king?
Yeah.
You know? Like, I, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm, you know, I don't care. And I think Littlefinger's game plan is ultimately to get all the Starks to turn against each other so he could be like, see, Sansa, you know, you want this mustache. But,
yeah, I just feel like that's a misreading of his character, though. I think he would realize what cards he's holding better than that.
No, it is, because, like, the Littlefinger that, you know, we see in the books, he's, like, arguably smarter than Varys. He's the smartest person in the whole show. Like,
not even the books.
Yeah,
early seasons.
He's just kind of, like, sitting there, like, twiddling his thumbs, hoping. And I'm like, Littlefinger doesn't hope for shit. He's got everything figured out. And, like, if he were, you know, as smart as he is in the books, as soon as Bran, you know, started tripping on acid, he would have dipped the fuck out. That's, like, that's what, you know, book Littlefinger would do.
That was what, I think they spent, was it this last episode or the one before, basically letting the audience know it's like, there are now people at Winterfell that are going to be able to figure out his bullshit. Like, we've got all-seeing cripple boy, you know, that, yeah, he might hang out by some trees and send ravens places to look at shit, but he also apparently knows everything that is going on currently. And, you know, super spy, change-your-face assassin girl. And they're both related to the chick that he's trying to bang. So, like, they kind of, it was almost like the show was trying to tell you, it's like, hey, whatever Littlefinger thought he was going to get done is not going to get done, and then also proceeded to show, no, well, Bran is looking north and not paying attention, and Arya apparently forgot how to sneak around and was like the most obvious.
You know, for real.
It was, a, it was like Ron Burgundy. Time, so. Like, I see you, Ron. I see you.
It was just weird.
When she, like, slammed the door to his chambers, I'm like, oh, that's so loud. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like, window, like, there's a window there, too. Like, she could have climbed out.
So silly.
And why isn't she wearing a mask?
Yeah, she could have been dressed up as anybody.
Exactly.
But Littlefinger, I think he would have known that, because Littlefinger is from Braavos, so he's definitely aware of the Faceless Men. So he's probably slightly aware that Arya can do that. Or at least, you know, she's got the, you know, capability of finding someone who can.
Yeah, but Arya was one of the Faceless Men, and she didn't see it coming.
That's true.
Yeah, which that was kind of like
and ultimately, what do they expect to happen with that note? Like, is she just going to be extra mad at Sansa? Like,
see, that's the frustrating thing, is that it's one of those things that you see it coming. You're like, oh, the characters are all going to have to be really stupid for this to work.
Yeah,
like, for this to amount to anything, they're going to have to be way stupider than, you know, we expect they should be.
Which is what they've been trying to kind of say is not the case for this entire, like, you know, the whole thing about everyone leveled up but Sansa, like, you know, that whole meme. It's just like, but then they're still stupid enough to fall for this. Like, and I mean, I guess we're projecting because this is in between episodes and everything. So it could all just be like, oh, guess what, Littlefinger? We saw your shit and we're going to start chopping body parts off. You know, that could technically happen in this next episode. But where it's leading at this point, it's just like, really? Of all the things to fall for, that's what you fall for?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't like that though, even because it's just very like cliche, like we were saying, it's what you expect, but even if they do like turn it around, it's a very like it's very cheap. It's kind of like Ocean's 12, where all like the double twists and crosses are like fucking so stupid in retrospect.
Yeah,
but you didn't see it coming because the script didn't reveal itself yet.
And I mean, I know Littlefinger was leading, you know, Arya on with that note, which wasn't really even that bad, even though we didn't get a good chance to look at it. I know in the back of my mind, I was like, oh, someone on Reddit will pause it and post it in the morning.
Saw what it was. You know, did you see what it was?
Yeah, it was like when Sansa wrote in like season 2, like Cersei made her write it. Which, that's not even, like, a bad letter. Like, phrase shitty, but...
That's what, like, I wondered why they kept it hidden. That really annoyed me. It was like, this was something that I definitely didn't remember. And maybe they, on their, you know, last episode or previously on, they returned to it. But I always skip that because I don't like to, you know, get telegraphed what's going to happen. But it was like, why just linger briefly on the letter? Just say what it says if it's... That's important.
Well, that would end up just being more cheap dialogue. I don't know.
It probably would.
That and the whole Rhaegar thing with Gilly. It's like, stop giving the audience homework to fill in the blanks here. Like, that's not what... I don't know. That's not fun.
Yeah, we don't all have an Anthony in our lives to tell us exactly what happened.
Consider yourself lucky.
Did we talk last time about how it's just like almost just like parade of Easter eggs? I mean, like, kind of going hand in hand with like John saying, oh, remember we met each other. There's like all those, like, oh, Gendry, I thought maybe you were still rowing. Like, the meme.
We talked about the chicken, like the hound saying that he liked chicken. And, you know, the kind of meeting of Danny and John, which Melisandre literally said, I brought fire and ice together. It's like, oh, fire and ice, how about that? You know, it's like, you know, just too hokey at times, and where it was like, basically, I think we basically said that this is like, you know, fan fiction at this point, and it's kind of fulfilling a lot of the wants and desires of the fan base. On mass,
like Gendry just coming like, back at all?
Yeah. Even though Anthony did call it. I said it on Twitter, but Anthony did call that he was going to make a return.
Yeah, I saw a tweet like right after dinner. I was like, fuck, I got to watch this episode before my brain remembers what Anthony said.
I tried to make it as vague as possible. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, I mean, I didn't think of it.
Well, didn't we know that because like that actor was like on the press tour or something, or like
we don't all work at E Entertainment tonight.
Nah, it was me and only me. I'm the only one who knew that.
Oh yeah, I had no idea.
No. I mean, that again,
I just believe in Anthony.
But I feel like they're doing themselves a disservice by reintroducing these characters and keeping these other characters around, like Bronn and Brienne, because it's forcing them to speed up the pace because they have to like keep all these balls in the air. But it's like, just trim the roster, man, and you can keep it a little bit tighter.
Well, I think what's his name? Like, Beric Dondarrion's still in the show, but he died like in book 3. But they still keep him because the audience recognizes him, which I get.
I think that he's worth keeping just because, like Jorah, he is one of the most awesome voices on the show.
Yes, he does.
That scene with the two of them, I was like, damn, this is exactly.
Oh, does anyone else think he looks like Sting? I mean, he does. From the promos and stuff, we have to see him with that flaming sword. So, I mean, they got to keep him around long enough to at least do that once.
Yeah, and that's cool as fuck, so I'm okay with that. But, like Sam and Gilly, I would have killed off, like, in season 5. No, like, even as I like Grey Worm a lot, but like I would have probably killed mm-hmm. him too. Like, I think he's just there because he's a familiar face. Because yeah. like Danny has like a shitload of other Unsullied besides Grey Worm. Like, he's mm-hmm. their commander, but she's also got like the Brazen Beast. She's got like a whole bunch of, you know, different people back at home in, or Marine, including Dario, who I'm kind of glad we're never going to see again, I guess. Because she's moved
Watch
on to...
Watch they bring
to...
him back to.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah,
he
just meet
will.
The guys north of the wall and be like, can I join your squad? Like, just pointlessly.
Listen, I'm going to make a case for Grey Worm real quick, okay?
Grey Worm's got a great... actually, there's two really important things that Grey Worm brings to the table.
The one important mm-hmm. thing is that we got to see Missandei naked.
Those were actually the two important things.
Those are the two important things? Yes, yeah. Because that is a beautiful woman. Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's exactly... You know, the thing
that
is,
that was the entirety of the case.
That's all I got.
I mean, that's my case, too. But I think also... I think that's the only nudity or sex we've had this season. And
oh, my God, yeah. I think you're right.
And, you know, it's just good to think about, like, you know, the show, what made the show popular. And I think what made it popular was that it was basically kind of giving people, like, a you know, Sopranos version or Deadwood version of a common setting. Because, you know, you have, like, Lord of the Rings was super popular. Everyone in Lord of the Rings is chaste and is, like, yes. you know, either super, you know, noble or, like, you know, magically evil. And Game of Thrones gave us a world where, you know, people wanted to fuck because that's what people like to do and get drunk and their mistakes, you know, had, you know, consequences and they maybe didn't like their family. And so it was like a fully realized, realistic, you know, take on the fantasy setting. And I feel like it's so much now almost... It's almost kind of reverted to being more of a stock fantasy story because you really are losing a lot of those relationships and the history and even the sexes, you know. It's like, you know, well, you want to get horny again? Like, John doesn't like, get horny anymore?
It became a Xena warrior princess.
It's kind of part of like what made the show like unique though, and like it wasn't just the sex, which was cool, and like I'm not gonna complain about, you know, boobs, but like all the characters is interacting, but like having somewhat normal discussions. I know a lot of people complained like, oh, it's filler, but like the scene where Tyrion is like telling Missandei and Grey Worm like, oh, have a drink, let's tell a joke, and like I know a lot of people were like, oh, you're wasting time, but that's like what made the show like more. I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah,
like,
I agree
it
that,
made
yeah.
it made it like more human. Whereas like,
right,
like all right, it, like at Winterfell, I have like even though Bran is like fucking tripping, like I don't understand why. Like you mean to tell me that this whole time Arya hasn't sat down with Bran and been like, so can you tell me about these visions, dude? Like,
yeah, like, when Bran's on, when Bran's not on screen, he doesn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though months must have passed with how much like travel everyone's doing. So, they still haven't been like, hey, Bran, why don't you clue us in a little bit? Is there anyone hanging around us who we should be really concerned about?
Is there, yeah. What's mm-hmm. With all these secret notes, Bran?
Well,
maybe you can tell us.
That does bring up kind of an interesting point. Is the fact that the show is almost entirely like magic based at this point, where we have dragons, we have undead, we have the means to defeat them and everything. So that has become the main focus of everyone besides maybe Cersei. The fact that that's the only real thing that people have to talk about now, that we are in a position that's why the show is less interesting, because the parts of the show that made it great beyond the, you know, the rampant nudity and, you know, coarse language was the fact mm-hmm. that it felt like real people were having real conversations about real issues. And now it's like, shit, we got to kill stuff with fire and dragons and stuff. That now that that's what everyone talks about, it's less endearing.
Yeah. I mean,
no, exactly.
Well, because it's like when we first see the dragons, it's like, oh, wow, this world has like active magic. That's cool. And then like we knew like the magic was kind of there, but now it's like so in your face. It's kind of like, oh, It kind of like drives off the mystique of like characters like Melisandre, and you know, it makes them seem like less mysterious and powerful if fucking everyone under the sun can have a flaming sword or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It is a bit like in Lord of the Rings, where that whole, you know, you have Gandalf and you know he's powerful, but he's like doing a little bit here, a little bit there, you know, breaking a bridge or, you know, whatever. And then at the end of that, or in the middle of the one movie, just a ghost army comes in and kills everybody in like 30 seconds. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that kind of took the edge off.
Yeah, you got to like just meter it out. You can't just flop it all out there.
Well, I mean, that's like what made the show like so special to begin with in the series, is that the magic just wasn't there in the beginning. So it wasn't so completely unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you got like people who never really watched fantasy shows get into it. Because like you were saying, Frankie, it was just like a show about like real people in a interesting setting. And to everyone else's point too, like they were smart characters too. So yeah. Very fun to watch them like plot. But now it's removed all that.
Yeah, I mean like, If you think about the first, and I mean, it's really easy to talk about the first season with rose-tinted glasses, because it was probably one of the best first seasons of any show. Also mainly because it was based off of a book, almost, you know, beat for beat. But the whole, like, subplot of Ned, like, being a detective, essentially, trying to figure shit out, like, on the low and get mm-hmm. things done in, like, the most, like, noble, well-meaned way possible. Like, that was way more interesting than almost the entirety of this season so far. And that was just one character working on one part of this, you know, overall game and everything. And it just seems like, you know, I guess the motivations aren't any less noble because, you know, they're trying to save the world. But I think when you have a problem that is that big and that overarching and like kind of affects everyone, it becomes more kind of this is just like the same storyline as almost any movie or TV show ever. Like before, there was like the actual Game of Thrones was being played, but now it's like because they're trying to save the world, it's like less meaningful, I guess, which is weird because it's like, oh yeah, should probably be pretty stoked to try and make sure that not everyone is murdered, but it just, I don't know, it's like less interesting, I guess.
Well, it's that, and I mean, I think one of the undersung aspects of the show that made it exciting early on, and you know, on through for quite a while, was that, I mean, it's a show that was really based on counterbalances. So, I mean, one of the things that you know, is popular I was at a party recently, and people were talking about Game of Thrones, and everyone's knocking on how stupid Ned Nerd. Stark was. Yeah, exactly. And that always annoys me, because I mean the whole point of the first season and of that character is that he didn't really have a choice but to tell Cersei that he knew he was onto her, because the whole point of his character is he didn't want to be responsible for kids dying, and if you know he outed Cersei's incest while Robert was there, he would have her three children killed. So, you know, that puts an interesting limit on his actions and what he can do, and that's what kind of gets him killed. And that feeds so much of the show for so long. You know, you have characters who kind of their actions are limited, or their path is suddenly blocked by some change in the counterbalance. You know, suddenly someone else has leverage over them, or they have a personal fault, or, you know, something happens. And now I think that you have so much less of that, partly because the stakes have changed in a way. You know, when people are talking about, you know, oh, we got to go kill the White Walkers, it's like, okay, well, it's harder to fit that into the kind of selfish interest that the show is built on. But you also have these moments that, like, they have really weak excuses for why something can't happen. Like, Bran is just basically not telling people everything he knows, even though it's really important, and you're not given a reason why. And, like, the whole plot of the season is kind of stalled out on the idea that, you know, Daenerys can at any moment win the war and has decided not to for really flimsy reasons. And it it takes it down a level compared to what those old shows were like, where everyone was kind of really doing their best to jockey around ever-changing circumstances. Now the circumstances aren't really changing much. People are just kind of like, oh, well, what if we go find a dead body up north of the wall? And, you know, that let's do that instead of winning the war.
Let's do Stand By Me instead.
Well, no, I mean, oh my God. No, like, I mean, I think I get, like, I don't know if that this is going to happen in the books. It's a stupid plan. The whole
dude, this is definitely not going to happen in the books. Come on.
Because, like, I can't imagine George would just be like, and then Tyrion went to kidnap. Like, that would never happen. But, like, I get that, like, okay, they want to show, like, the urgency of the situation of the White Walkers and all that. I personally think the show would benefit without having White Walkers, even though they're kind of the whole point. But anyway, like, I don't
know. Well, I think it would either benefit from not having the White Walkers or putting more focus on them. Like, to have the urgency, they should already be, like, scaling the wall or something. That adds urgency. Yeah, I agree. Right now, they're just, we have no idea where they are.
They've been walking for, like, 2 seasons now.
I mean, they started marching at the end of season 2.
Yeah, but the wall is made out of magic that holds them back. I don't think they touch on that in the show, but show don't tell, but yeah, like, but I mean, now they can, you know, presumably pass right through because Bran is marked and blah, blah, blah. It's assumed the same magic that kept the three-eyed raven safe is the magic that kept the wall safe. So they could probably walk, or they could walk around it. I don't fucking know.
But again, this whole thing, if the Night King touched him and now he can pass through the wall, show that, like, they're right now, in my mind, as a person who didn't read the books, the wall is impenetrable. So what's the urgency? Like, just meet him at the wall and shoot arrows at him. Like, show that he has a way in or something, or show them already beyond the wall. There's just no urgency at all with these walkers.
I mean, that's also another casualty of, you know, just kind of flippantly being like, oh, well, people can move fast and we're just skipping in the travel time because that'd be boring. It's like, yeah, but you still have, you know, the whole plot is based on this ticking clock. And now you're saying that, like, you know, months can fly off the clock and it doesn't really matter to that. And that kind of kills the whole point of the dread brought by this, mm-hmm. you know, larger than
maybe,
life.
Maybe they've just, maybe they've Dunkirked it where time.
Hey, no spoilers.
I'm just saying, time is very weird in that movie.
Okay.
So maybe that time displacement is similar to what is going on north of the wall.
I agree, though. I think they should be south of the wall by now. I think, because, I mean, the problem is everyone's preparing for them, and it's like, isn't the exciting thing, like, getting caught, you know, oh, we were playing the Game of Thrones too long, and, mm-hmm. you know, that isn't that the whole kind of moral of the story, more or less?
Because, yeah, now what they're setting up now is that these guys are going to go from Dragonstone to Eastwatch, grab a white, or wit, whatever, and then bring it all the way back to King's Landing. And in all that time, the White Walkers are still not going to be breaching the wall. I mean, that might change, but that's what they're telling us.
In that, like, situation, they are quick enough to get to where they can get one, and then get back to the wall, and then to King's Landing before those people over that same amount of time can make it to the wall. Even if they're all just walking, or, you know, walking their horses, their undead horses along and everything, you would think that time-wise they would be able to get there, especially if they get attacked and then they're like, oh, well, let's chase these guys that just took one of our guys for some reason. That's weird. I mean, how is that going to play?
I mean, it's worth pointing out that, I mean, all they really have to do is kill somebody north of the wall, put them in a cage, and then that person will reanimate. Isn't that what happens? Isn't that what happened to the guys they brought back into?
Yeah, pretty like, the much. First... Yeah.
Yeah. So John should know that.
So why, if, well, I mean, I guess John wouldn't do this, but why didn't they just pick one of the guys in the in the Inglorious Bastards group and then, you know, just walk out in the wall and then just chop him up and then just bring him back?
Well, yeah, what about Barrett. Sting? Yeah, exactly.
Like, Barrick has been brought back to life, I don't know, like, 7 times. Like, I don't know, maybe if they bring him back beyond the wall, he'll be different. That'd be kind of cool to see. Probably see it next week. when they decide to trim the fat of the cask. But
next time on Game of Thrones.
I mean, I assume what's going to happen is that their little expedition is going to be the fuck up that leads to the walkers getting either through the wall or bring down the wall or whatever. I assume that's happening this season, because it'd be so lame if they go up there, actually successfully get a walker, and then get away. And it's like, all right, now what's the next plan? But that does make it more frustrating that, like, the, you know, the centerpiece, kind of the conclusion, or the next, you know, big step of this plot is going to be such a fucking stupid plan that Tyrion came up with, like, on a whim.
So we've definitely shown our distaste for this. Going to move on to something else here. But before we do that, Ethan, you have not read the books at all, right?
No, not read the books.
Lame. Okay.
So just so you know, there's apparently this there's this horn that can break the wall.
I've heard of this, yeah.
So
there's the horn that can bind dragons too.
That's true. I'm wondering how many actual horns there are out there.
Real horn deficit on the show.
Yeah, it's pissing me off.
Makes me horny.
Yeah.
So I think if that is the last shot of this season, is this horn that people might not know about being produced and just completely crumbling the wall, I think I'd be okay with that.
It would be okay only if they don't explain what the horn is and the Night King goes to blow the horn and it's the sax solo from Baker Street. If that happened, I'd be like, all right, I'm fully on board now.
Well, you know that's going to be a fan edit afterwards.
Yeah.
So even if it doesn't happen in the show, you're going to have it.
It's going to be the epic sax song, too.
I was thinking, Careless Whisper?
I think that's what it is.
I think that's what I would go for. It'll be playing underneath. I'll use that, and I'll make sure that I put it in the annotation so we don't get in trouble.
Where is Euron, by the way? Is he going to show up just at Eastwatch? Be like, I'm here too, motherfucker.
Euron in the books has a horn that can bind dragons, so I don't know where the fuck he is. But
they're just going to start using horns. There's just going to be a bunch of horns going on simultaneously. It's going to be really confusing.
It's going to be like You Got Served, but with trumpets.
I like it. Drumline. Nick Cannon. All right. Bible, well, now it's time for the Geekstrom Maelstrom, and you guys have heard that music by now, so it's great to hear that little Price is Right jingle.
Yeah, the Baker Street solo.
I love it.
And we're gonna just talk about one thing today, and that is cinema.
Not much of a maelstrom, is it?
Well, you know, sometimes
it's one big maelstrom
of one thing.
It's not the size of the maelstrom, but it's the amount of destruction that it causes. That's kind
of
weird.
I was going to say motion of the ocean.
Okay. I'm sorry, I interrupted you. What was the one thing?
CinemaSins. Another thing
whiskey?
That Ethan is pissed off about.
Oh, well, CinemaSins. I thought you said CinemaSins.
Yeah, I heard Jameson's.
James Woods.
We've got a problem.
Oh, yeah, James Woods.
Yeah, also an idiot. Go ahead, Ethan. Tell us why you're pissed off about this thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can set it up. Well, apparently, CinemaSins, if you don't know what that is, it's started as a YouTube channel that goes through and tallies the amount of sins for movies. And these sins are, I mean, a lot of times there's silly stuff like continuity errors or just stuff like that. But for worse movies, they get, you know, deep into why a plot is flawed. And I really like this show. I watch it. I think I've seen most all of them, actually. But apparently they just did one for the new King Kong movie. And the director of that movie caught wind, and he went on a very long rant on Twitter about why these CinemaSins guys are trash and like trying to take down film and like are anti-art, he said.
Oh,
even I know, even at one point, no, I'm with you. At one point he compared fans of CinemaSins to Trump supporters.
Oh boy.
And that's kind of what set me off. He did.
How dare he?
When he said, I read his rant, I didn't see that. Oh, I said, he says I'm reading it right now.
It's the one that I replied to. He's just a salty baby. And I don't know. I think CinemaSins is fine. It's just, it's a comedy show. It's not, they don't really critique in the way that, like, you know, Roger and Ebert, I don't think they even would consider themselves on that level. It's all very tongue-in-cheek.
Don't you mean the Geekstrom podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Such luminaries, I mean, as...
The gold standard.
Or the Rest in Peace Hard Men.
Wait, what?
The Hard Men are going to get hard again.
I was like, did we just break the news here on the Geekstrom podcast?
I don't know, I was a little heartbroken.
We just haven't done one in a while.
They might come back in new form. We'll see. Yeah, that was kind of part of the reason why I was supporting the CinemaSins too, is because, like, basically that's what we've been doing on this website.
Have you guys watched them? Oh yeah, I've watched it, and I've always thought it was incredibly tongue in cheek, and that a lot of the things that, you know, especially when they would get into something that was very plot specific, was, I mean, nothing like, it wasn't cynical for the just to be cynical. I never thought anything about it was mean-spirited. I thought it was just, you know, poking fun. I mean, there's a sin counter, and sometimes they would have, you know, things that were super innocuous be like 15 or 16 sins, but then they would take sins away for something that they thought was good. So, I mean, it was never anything to me more than, you know, like a enjoyable kind of comedic take on movie reviews. I never thought anything negative about it. I haven't seen the one in question, so I don't know if it somehow became incredibly negative from the last episode that I seen to this one. But, you know, I mean, I watched the one on Suicide Squad, and I thought it was hilarious because it was like, yeah, this movie sucks, and they're still managing to make this sound pretty funny because they're like, come on. It was basically just saying come on over and over again.
Well, yeah, they tend to focus on bad movies because that gives them more fodder. But they'll do movies that they admit during the episode that they really enjoy. Mm-hmm. And they'll take sins off or, like, point out something that they think is awesome. And they also have a podcast, too, that I think is really good. It's called The Sincast. And I've listened to a few of them. And you can tell they all really love movies. They're all, like, you know, geeks of movies who've worked at movie theaters and stuff. So I definitely don't think they're coming from any, like, vitriol or anything. They're just goofing around.
Yeah, cool. They're not like Red Letter Media, like Mr. Plinkett reviewing Star Wars. Like he's like brutal. Don't get me wrong, I agree with some of it, but I get, like, you know, oh, you don't want like a mean spirited review, but I mean, shut the fuck up. Like, they're just having fun. Like, they're admitting that they like movies, and they're like, it's not like they're going after you personally. It's not like they're saying the director is a dickwad and his movie sucks. Like, they're just like, oh, this part of the movie doesn't make sense. But it's, you know, like, for the most part, they still like the movies. So I don't know. I didn't watch the one that, you know, I didn't watch the Kong one, but.
Yeah, I don't watch them if I haven't seen the movie yet. I'll be the contrarian of the group, though, which is weird because I feel like more negative. But I think that they can run into maybe a tone problem. And I think that's why Red Letter Media does their stuff with Mr. Plinkett, because the fact that they're doing it from the, you know, the point of view of like a serial killer, you know, psychopath is kind of like puts the tongue in cheek there. And I think that probably the podcast is probably better at getting their tone across. I would say that, like, the fact that they take sins off for things they like kind of would suggest that what they're saying is, you know, what they think about the movie. But I do agree that I think that it's fine if they just want to go in and say everything that's, you know, if they want to go and, like, you know, lean in on just full nitpicking. I'm all about that. And I think that that's fine. I think it is funny a lot of the time. But I do know sometimes I watch movies that I really hated, and I'm surprised that because their focus is so much on individual nitpicks, they aren't usually very plot related. It's usually, you know, a character says something or does something and they could have done it another way, and they're like, that's a sin. And, you know, because all their sins are usually equal, sometimes they're not. Sometimes they give a ton of negative points for something they really hated. But because it's usually equal, it is... I don't know. I don't think it would be out of line for them to reconsider their format. And definitely if you were like a director of something that they nitpicked, it looked like what the guy had was specific like counterpoints to what they were picking apart, where they were just flat out wrong in what they were talking about. I think that anything, if it's done lazily or sloppily, is bad. So I think that the principle of what they're doing is fine, and I think it's funny. But I think, you know, they could do it better or worse, just like anything else.
I mean, yeah. It's also on the creators of said content to handle criticism properly. Like, I mean, I wouldn't call myself a creative sort because I haven't had anything published in God knows how long. But, like, if someone's, like, tearing apart your work, like, you know, you could just be like, oh, okay, well, I can explain this. Like, you don't go after, like, you know, reviewers and stuff. Like, you just don't do that. You see it with, like, indie game developers and stuff. They do that shit all the time, and it always backfires on them. So it's like they have, like, an image problem, too, I guess. I don't know. I think...
And, yeah. I mean, I saw, too, like, I don't know if the director himself was participating in it, but a lot of people who were supporting him in his, like, thread rant were, like, calling for YouTube to take down the videos and, like, people to pull ads from this channel. Yeah, it's like, come the fuck on.
I also don't like... I think some people were suggesting that anybody who makes their bones by, you know, commentary on an existing art is a parasite. And I think that's a really disgusting idea. That's what, obviously, you know, none of us are interested in supporting that mission.
Just spent an hour doing that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not that we're making money on it, but I think it's fine to make money on it. I mean, like ESPN, all it is talking about something that other people are doing. It doesn't, I mean, ESPN sucks, but you know what I mean? I think it's fine do... You know, art criticism, especially funny art criticism. I think most of the Red Letter Media, so I haven't watched them in a while, but I used to really love them. I would watch them over and over because I thought they were really well done.
Mm-hmm. Also, Cry Me a River. This movie made almost $600 million.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Like, you're making a Hollywood movie. This isn't like a painting you did and it took you like 20 years to do and no one bought it. Yeah, it's like you're putting this out for public consumption. And then you're bitching about people having an opinion about it. It's ridiculous. I mean, I understand kind of there is definitely a culture of, I don't know how to describe it. I guess maybe nitpicking or like thinking you're smarter than these people who are putting out the actual content that you're consuming. And those people themselves are not actually putting out content. But I think this instance, it's like this guy's way off base.
I agree.
That's all there's to say on the matter.
Yeah, pretty much hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, that, and I think as long as the CinemaSins guys are just like, all right, whatever, you know, because it would be weird for a group of creators that make their bones off of you know, being critical, couldn't take criticism in return, but at least when they try and criticize, it's funny and not like, you know, vitriolic. But oh well,
that they better guy not
is probably
going to
direct another movie and he'll be all right, and CinemaSins will make another video about another movie and they'll be fine too.
I think a lot of it has to do with just like the way creatives and directors and critics like communicate with each other. Like, okay, yeah, it's tongue-in-cheek, whatever. I think the directors are, you know, definitely overreacting. But it's like, you don't know who you're going to, if you're in that business and you're putting in, you know, shit out there, like, you don't want to, you know, insult another actor or like another, like, producer or director, because you don't know who the fuck you're going to work with. It's all, you know, the same club. Like, that's why, like, if I were a rich and famous actor, I wouldn't talk shit about anyone ever, because I'd be like, yeah, I'm probably going to do a movie with them.
What's the point of being rich and famous then? You gotta talk shit.
yeah, could run for president and get elected, apparently.
Yeah.
Talk shit money. Well, you know who's never gonna make any money off of any of this stuff? Any of us.
Yeah, these guys.
Wow, yeah. Bullshit.
But we did appreciate you listening to us ramble about, you know, dragons and shit for about an hour or so. And hopefully this is the second Game of Thrones podcast you've listened to, because this is the second one we've recorded. Now, are they on iTunes and stuff yet? No, but I'm working on it. Hopefully you've listened to this one off of iTunes. But it's all housed normally at the, which I was really scared about for a second, that it might not exist anymore, Hard Men to Please website.
I'm sorry.
There's also some podcasts there, which I'm sensing a revival, I think, especially with these four guys hearing their beautiful voices, which you can also hear from time to time on the Hard Men to Please podcast. Has anyone got anything to plug? I know that Ethan, you just kind of do all your work through the Asterixar Twitter, right?
Yeah, it's excellent. It's a very excellent Twitter.
Yes, except for its views Asterixar on Tobey Maguire.
Right. Yeah, and all my same things I said about Game of Thrones are there.
And Anthony, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AntDePalma, DiPalma. I go on leftist rants all the time. It's very bad.
Yeah, don't be confused if you get there and he's cosplaying as a lady.
Yeah, I'm a sexy gal.
Also made a list of his order for all of the released Star Wars movies, which I agree with up until the very end.
Well, oh, yeah, that's right. You would, one and two.
Attack of the Clones is the worst. Ugh.
I can respect that.
I wouldn't necessarily disagree with that either. I probably would have flipped Rogue One and Force Awakens too, though. As long as they're both the peanut butter and jelly in the sandwich, there's like no putting them above the originals or below the prequels. You can get me at Justicide on Twitter. I don't go on leftist rants. I retweet a lot of leftist rants though.
Hey.
And all of this will be given to you at the Geekstrum Geek STRUM on Twitter. So, from all of us to all of you, have a good evening. Or, damn it, just bye. I guess just bye. I don't want to do the Truman Show.
Yeah, don't put us into a time frame here.
Bye.
Good tomorrow.
See ya.
Bye.